of an unofficial youth day. We already announced it. It kind of fell out that way because the tape, the video we had that the Home Office asked us to play on this day is about the camp system. And then Sabbath School was looking at, was working with Sabbath School, we're looking at whether to have school or not. And I said, well, you know, the video is really for the youth and obviously the parents, but focused on youth. And I said, I'll just go ahead and focus on them as well for the sermonette. So then we didn't have Sabbath School. And I noticed David Hurst was greeting on the door, so we really kind of fell into it quite well, even though it wasn't particularly planned. When I was in junior high, I had a friend who I thought would be my friend forever. He lived right across the street, and I was a year older than he was, but we did almost everything together. After school, we played and rode our bikes and ran around and terrorized the neighborhood, went swimming together. When his family was out of town, I took care of their yard and their lawn. And sometimes we even got in trouble together. One time, the policeman brought us both home. And so I remember another time we decided we were going to make some explosives. And the easiest way was just to grind up the match head. And so we were in his parents' house, family room, and his mom was in the kitchen. And we were grinding a pile of match heads off to get the powder to make our explosives. And he was sitting there, and of course, as ignorant as we were, we had this big pile of the compound there, and he had a little spark, and it was right in his face. And he looked just like in the movies. He had that soot. And then he opened his eyes, and you could see his eyes. But it's just, he's covered. He looked like someone just in the cartoons where someone explodes. And it was all over the ceiling and all over the wall and the smoke off of this. It went up because it was quite a pile that was going there. And there's nothing you could do. The smell and everything. And his mother's only a room or two away. And so we were supposed to be friends for life. We were even blood brothers as we understood it then. We actually took and put a little tiny cut on each of our wrists, and we held our wrists together. You know, in societies around the world, that is a covenant. They call it a blood covenant, which relates, I would assume, to the covenants of God in terms of what people were looking at when they put that together. And so we thought we would be friends forever. One time I played a joke on him. He was home babysitting his little sisters, and he had a two-story house with a big some kind of a tulip tree, as I remember, right in front of it, and you could climb up the tree and across the limb, get on the roof, and I went in and up through the upstairs window in the bedroom and started making noises up there while they were downstairs, and I could tell they were getting very nervous, and finally I ran down the stairs yelling at them, and he ran and locked himself in the bathroom and locked his little brother or sisters out, left them to the burglars. So, you know, I thought that was remarkable that he would save himself first when push came to shove. All those things we did together, the best of friends, I went on to high school. I was a year older, and all of a sudden our schedule didn't match anymore, and we started doing different activities in part. Today, I don't even know where he is. In fact, I have not known where he was for over 30 years. True friends are really hard to find. And it's hard to be a true friend as well. When the teenagers, the younger children in this room, when you are as old as your parents, you will very likely have lost almost all of your current friends. That's hard to believe. You won't imagine that. You know, when little Dave Trebig, who's big Dave Trebig, went and left, I mean, he's gone. He went to another city, to another state. He's got new associations. And those kids that he grew up with here, he doesn't have contact in the same way with anymore. Now, yes, today we have the internet, then we didn't. But the fact is, the friends you have today, in many respects, will be gone when you grow up. And true friends are incredibly hard to find. When I went into high school, I had another best friend that formed at that time, that we did everything together as I moved on in my associations. And we had decided that when I got married and when he got married, we'd be each other's best man. And so he got married, and I had gone to college by then, and I actually came home from college and was his best man at the wedding. It was years later then when it came to be my turn, and I called him up And I said, I'm getting married, you know, it's your honor, you're the best man, even though we were no longer chumming together or running together in any way. And basically what he said was, wow, it's been a long time. And that was as far as it went. The conversation just kind of tapered off and ended. In all those years since high school, in that time when I was his best man, and then life kind of went on and I went to college, I've only even seen him one time, and that's when I looked him up myself. And when I went to visit him, he never even stood up and shook my hand. I mentioned that account one time. It was on the way right up here when we were transferred up. And when I came up by myself, I stopped and checked on him because I could go through the town where he lived. He never even got up and shook my hand. He was my best friend. There were times when, well, I remember one time he got in a fight and I had to back him up, and I was supposed to keep everybody else off the fight so the fight could be finished, and various things, so many things we did. We have no association at all anymore. True friends are really hard to find. When I've talked to teenagers in the past about friendships and what they valued in friendships, one of the things that came up was commitment. Commitment is something that you make a pledge to do. You bind yourself to a particular course of action. That's what a commitment is. We all want our friends to be committed, and by that we mean we want them to be committed to us. Partners in marriage obviously want, because of a binding commitment that has been made, they want their partner to be committed to them. We expect our friends to be there when we need them. We expect our friends to stand behind us or with us if we are opposed, and we expect our friends to remain our friends even if it hurts. Hopefully, we would do the same for them. Every year on TV, we see pictures of damage caused by earthquakes, and those are so traumatic because of the friendships, the families, the community bonds that are damaged and strained. We see people digging frantically in the rubble for survivors, family members, neighbors, or friends. There have been, over the last, say, decade, there have been a couple of major earthquakes in California, and I think because of the proximity, and maybe in my own mind because I lived there as well, some of the pictures that have come out of those earthquakes have been the most graphic to me. There were things I recognized. I saw pictures of bridges that had toppled, freeways that had collapsed or turned over. And there was one down in Los Angeles, and there was one up in San Francisco. And we see pictures of the rescue efforts that take place in the wake of those things. If I remember correctly, and I might not be exactly on, but it seems to me that the two earthquakes, both of them in California, were about 6.5 on the Richter scale, maybe up to 7 on one of them, but pretty close to 6.5 to 7. There was an earthquake in Armenia about a decade ago that registered 8.2 on the Richter scale. Do you know how high the Richter scale goes? Anybody know what the top of the scale is? Is it 10 or is it 9? 10? Okay. Top of the scale is 10. 8.2. Now, again, if I remember right, an 8 is 10 times as much as a 7. A 7 is 10 times as much as a 6. And so you're talking about a major increase in power as these ratings go up. The earthquake in Armenia lasted over 4 minutes. 30,000 people died. And after the earthquake, a father went to look for his son at school, and the building had been absolutely destroyed. And as he stood there in his grief, as it was printed out in the article at that time, he remembered telling his son, "No matter what, I will always be there for you." He had made a commitment to his son that he would always be there for him, and he dropped down and started to pick his way through the rubble on the corner of the school where his son's classroom had been. Now, because of the devastation was so widespread and all over, as people came by, other parents stood by and were shocked at the loss, their loss and the grief they faced, and there was no way in their mind they could get in and dig anyone out, and they were trying to salvage things at their homes. And he was digging in that one spot all alone. And other parents came by and tried to get him to stop because it was hopeless, because there was no way to save anyone. In that respect, it was too late. The fire chief came by and tried to get him to stop and to go home. The police chief came by and tried to get him to stop and go home, and he kept digging. He dug for 8 hours without stopping. Then he dug for 4 more hours. And then he dug for, well, he dug for 36 hours. And when people would come by, he would ask them to please to help him dig, and they couldn't, they were busy, they were trying to save someone else, trying to accomplish something else. After 38 hours of digging in the corner of that school classroom area, he heard a voice, and as much as it's hard to imagine, it was the voice of his son. He actually found his son. He saved the life of his son. That's commitment. That's absolutely true commitment. Wouldn't it be nice to think that somebody would come and dig us specifically out? In John 15 is a passage that we go through this time of year, and in verse number 13, greater love has no one than this, that one would lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends, Christ speaking, if you do whatever I command you, and no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Christ said that he would be our friend, and a true friend, a perfect friend who has never failed or made a mistake, a friend who has never not come through. There's a joke that we've all heard, I think, about having ham and eggs for breakfast. The chicken was involved, but the pig was committed. Christ just isn't involved in our lives. Sometimes we think of him as involved. He's impacting. He's affecting our lives. He stops and intervenes from time to time. He's more than involved. He's committed. He gave his life for us, and he continues to be there to rescue us from the rubble and the destruction of the society in which we live. I think it's important that we understand that. What young person in this room has not been healed at some point in time when they were anointed and healed by God? What young person in this room has not seen God's intervention in their life or their family's life in some way? Christ has shown that he is indeed a true friend and that he is committed. And I would have to ask you, are you his friend and are you committed in your youth and in your young age? I really would like you to think about that today. Are you also Christ's friend and are you committed as well?